Welcome back to Whence Came You, a Masonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry. Here's your host, Brother Robert Johnson.
Welcome back to Whence Came You. This is episode number 421. That's right, 421 episodes of Masonic Education, and it's all for you. And anybody else who's interested in Freemasonry or its quote-unquote kindred sciences. In the news this week, not a lot going on. Had some really great content come up on the Midnight Freemasons recently. A wonderful piece by Steve Harrison called Be a Warm Body, which I really identified with. If you didn't get a chance to check that one out, I would urge you to do that. This week on the program, I will be reading one of my good friend and brother's articles that he wrote that we featured on the Midnight Freemasons to give a little bit of interesting history on the Goose and Gridiron. If you know about that, great. If not, you can learn some cool history and not the typical stuff that you're normally going to hear about this. So we'll have that later on in the episode. But I think first and foremost, this week I wanted to go ahead and get into a wonderful paper that actually was an address at the Grand Lodge level to the brothers present at the Grand Lodge Symposium on Masonic Education in Colorado. The paper was actually, it's actually an address. He gave this address, Junior Grand Warden Ray Dunn of the Grand Lodge of Colorado gave this address, and I asked him for a copy of it and if he could do a reading for us. I think, you know, he's just gotten super busy, of course, as a Grand Lodge officer does, but he did send the paper. So I think what we're going to do is read that address to you because I thought it was fantastic. And so this is a Junior Grand Warden at the Grand Lodge level giving his address on Masonic education. And it was stunning, and I would be lying if I told you it wasn't one of those moments where it was like, I'm not crying, you're crying. It was a beautiful address, and I really think that it spoke from the heart, and Right Worshipful Ray Dunn nailed it. So let's get into that, but first we got to pay the bills. All right, so it's time to pay the bills. How do we make this show happen? This show happens because you, the listeners, help us out. So how do you help us out, though? Well, since July of 2011, this podcast has been here waiting for you every Sunday night at 9:30 p.m. Consistency is the name of the game. We are creating weekly Masonic education for anyone interested in Freemasonry and its kindred sciences. This is not a small endeavor. It requires hours of work each week on top of what we all have, right? We have work, kids, spouses, and we've got a few ways to help support this show. Really, our two main ways are through donations. You can become a contributor, a fellow, or a producer, and you can do that through Patreon. We have a $2 a month contributor level. You get your name on our website as a contributor. If you're a fellow, that's a $5 a month donation, and that puts your name on the website. I send you a card in the mail. I handwrite these cards when you do those donations. I don't have these things filled out. They're not pre-printed. None of that. This is me really trying to say thanks. Meaningful thanks. And of course, the producer level. Our producer level is $10 a month. You get the name on the website, a thank you card in the mail. And also with that, I'll send you the producer's pin also. Now, that's on Patreon. We have a lot of people who like to support us through PayPal. We offer those same exact perks. The contributor, the fellow, the producer, with all the same stuff through PayPal, a subscription model. So you can do either one of those things, or you can make a one-time gift through PayPal and just say, hey, I'm going to send you $2, or hey, I'm going to send you $3 one time, whatever the case is. I appreciate all of it. It offsets the cost of this podcast. Something to keep in mind is that we also sell the producer's pin by itself. It's $10. I have a Mason's Lady decal, and of course the It's Business Time, Adapting a Corporate Path for Freemasonry book that I co-wrote with John Ruark that has rave reviews all over Amazon.com, and you can get it on Amazon, not autographed, and you can get it on Audible also. All of the money that comes in through this stuff offsets the cost of putting this program together. And I want you to remember that you're the producer of the program. And in the last 10 years, Masonic education has come a long way. Is it a coincidence? Maybe. But we have to keep this ship on course. We're always pushing for better lodge experiences, Masonic Education, and this show offers a way to assist people in coming up with new ideas and things to bring to Lodge and to educate new brothers and people interested in the craft. So I would just say, if you're already a producer, a fellow, or a contributor, or you've donated cash at some point, or bought a pin, or whatever you've done for us, thank you, thank you, thank you. All right, thank you very much to everybody for considering those ways to support this program. Let's get into the education. As I mentioned, this is an address to the 2019 Annual Masonic Education Symposium, August 12th, 2019, AL 6019, Right Worshipful Brother Raymond H. Dunn, to be laid up among the records in the archives of the most worshipful Grand Lodge of Ancient Free and Accepted Masons of Colorado. Keynote address, quote, "To learn to attain knowledge, to be wise, is a necessity for every truly noble soul. To teach, to communicate that knowledge, to share that wisdom with others." End quote. Most worshipful Grand Master, worshipful masters, wardens, distinguished guests, and brethren all, thank you for the opportunity to address you at this year's Colorado Masonic Symposium. It is an honor and a pleasure to be in the presence of brothers who place so much emphasis on sharing and acquiring more knowledge, or more light in Masonry, through Masonic education. Since the focus of this year's symposium is Masonic symbology, I shall not spend a lot of time adding to that discussion. I will only reiterate that symbology is an important part of the mysteries of Freemasonry as a mediator between the physical world and the world of thought. It is a language, or rather a meta-language, which naturally depends on the culture and the context in which it is used. Since Jung's works in psychoanalysis, symbolism has taken on an important place in the life of our materialistic society, which in itself is a sign of its evolution toward the world of the spirit and spirituality. The functions of a symbol in the esoteric tradition are multiple. The symbol suggests everything in a veiled way, structuring our thoughts and allowing us to have moments of awareness that lead us to, quote-unquote, know thyself. In principle, a symbol is never fully interpreted because its veiled part is more important than its visible aspect. According to an 18th century unknown philosopher, quote, "The symbol only expresses the label on the bag and does not commonly reveal the content of the thing," end quote. And as conveyed in Morals and Dogma, all religious expression is symbolism, since we can describe only what we see, and the true objects of religion are the seen. The earliest instruments of education were symbols, and all other religious forms differed and still differ according to external circumstances and imagery, and according to differences of knowledge and mental cultivation. All language is symbolic, so far as it is applied to mental and spiritual phenomena and action. I will now discuss on the reason why we are here, that of gathering together as friends and brothers to increase our knowledge of Freemasonry, or perhaps a better explanation is to, quote-unquote, improve ourselves in Masonry. As I considered what I would talk about this evening, I began to gather a bit of information that enlightened me to a few facts. In the state of Colorado, there are 6,189 Master Masons, 93 fellow crafts, and 248 entered apprentices, for a total of 6,530 Masons. There are approximately 150 attendees, or 2.3% of Colorado Masons at this year's Colorado Masonic Symposium, which provides an opportunity for every Colorado Mason to learn more about their craft. There are 313, or approximately 4.8% plus or minus, subscribers to the Rocky Mountain Mason Magazine, which provides scholarly articles on a wide range of Masonic subjects. The percentage of Masons that attend the annual symposium and or receive the Rocky Mountain Mason, two of the best opportunities to increase knowledge of Freemasonry, is low, or, should I dare say, dismal. In 1875, Dr. and illustrious Brother Albert Mackey penned an article that is just as relevant today as when it was written. Brother Mackey tells us, quote, "I suppose there are more Masons who are ignorant of all the principles of Freemasonry than there are men of any other class who are chargeable with the like ignorance of their own profession. Nothing is more common than to encounter Freemasons who are in utter darkness as to everything that relates to Freemasonry. They are ignorant of its history. They know not whether it is a mushroom production of today or whether it goes back to remote ages for its origin. They have no comprehension of the esoteric meaning of its symbols or its ceremonies and are hardly at home in its modern recognition. End quote. More recently, New Brunswick Freemason brother Voshio Wachizu informs us that, quote, "We as Freemasons are encouraged to make a daily advancement in Masonic knowledge," end quote. Information on Freemasonry is available from numerous sources, official publications of Grand Lodges, books, periodicals, and the Internet, to say nothing of other learned brethren, lodges of instruction, lodges of research, seminars, and study courses offered in some jurisdictions, yet we find many brethren that know no more about Freemasonry than the often forgotten lessons conveyed when they were initiated, passed, and raised. Conversely, due to the amount of information that can be obtained via the Internet, we are seeing men enter Masonry with more knowledge about Freemasonry than some of our long-serving brethren. Do not kid yourself into thinking that is impossible for anyone outside the craft to know anything of Masonry. A prospective candidate must be made to realize that Masonry has a spiritual foundation before being initiated. In fact, even before he is handed a petition. This might prevent some from joining, but it would ensure that those who do join are of the right material and doing so for the right reason. The brother that assumes that all the knowledge he needs to possess are contained in the 3 degrees does a disservice to himself and the craft. Let us not make the mistake of believing that the ceremony of initiation makes a man a Mason. The ceremony is vital and necessary, but unless the lessons of the ceremony are understood, it is nothing. That members receive instruction in the ceremonies of the craft is of vital importance. Fault cannot be found in Freemasonry itself, but should be found with the view that we stop our efforts after the conferral of the degrees. We are amiss in our duty to the craft and to each other when we do not properly prepare candidates and then abandon the newly made Mason to their own devices. In opening and closing the lodge, the worshipful master is reminded that one of his duties is to, quote-unquote, set the craft to work and give them proper instruction. Yet, there are masters who have no more knowledge about the significance and meaning of the ritual than the words they memorize. The meaning of the ritual is lost in the rush to get through meetings, performing other administrative requirements of the lodge, and initiating, passing, and raising as many men as we can in an effort to increase the number of our dues-paying members. The initiatic experience has been replaced by expediency. The desire to increase our knowledge has taken a place behind the desire to increase our numbers. So how do we go about improving ourselves in Masonry? As I ask myself this question, I always find myself returning to the answer we are all familiar with, a peculiar system of morality veiled in allegory and illustrated by symbols. When this definition is given to the profane, its meaning is as veiled as the secrets we strive to keep and only serves to confuse rather than to inform. However, to us the meaning becomes perfectly clear. A system of morality, or a set of principles or procedures according to which something is done, veiled in allegory, the acquisition of knowledge by learning new things while comparing them to already known ones, or to conceal from those, except to whom the teachings rightly belong, illustrated by symbols, understanding that defining a symbol limits its scope, and Freemasonry by using symbols, which are not closely defined, makes it possible for many men of many minds each to read his own conception of the truth into the symbols. It is my opinion that the best answer that could be afforded the question of how best to improve ourselves in Masonry is Masonic education. Education that nurtures a lifelong journey to improve one's knowledge of history, philosophy, symbolism, and a deeper meaning that lies behind the ritual. Education is defined as, quote-unquote, the process of receiving or giving systematic instruction in a particular subject, or, quote-unquote, an enlightening experience. As the stability of a building is largely dependent on the strength of its foundation, similarly the educational foundation of a Mason is equally important to their growth throughout the Masonic life. As I engage in discussion with brothers about Masonic education, the opinions vary greatly. The majority of brothers I speak with agree that Masonic education is not only important, but a necessity. I also hear that some come just for the social or fraternal aspect of belonging to an organization or club, an opportunity to get out of the house and hang out with the guys, that they are content with the outward lessons inculcated in the 3 degrees and have no desire to delve into the mysteries of Freemasonry. As a fraternity or fraternal organization, we most certainly meet the definition, a group of people sharing a common profession or interests. However, Freemasonry's inner recesses contain some of the greatest truths known to man that are worthy of further consideration and require much more thought, study, and reflection than that of non-Masonic organizations. Freemasonry is a tool by which man may examine his existence and labor to improve not only himself but society. Freemasonry serves as a vehicle for man to learn more about his creator, nature, and himself, and as such, the man who views Freemasonry through the lens of a social club has perhaps knocked on the wrong door. Freemasonry is not for everyone. The catchy slogan, to be one, ask one, is not necessarily an asset. What is Masonic education? To be blunt, Masonic education is the answer to many lodges' problems, and it is also the reason many members joined Freemasonry. Masonic education is the catalyst by which we may begin to fulfill the reason for which we are here, to improve myself in Masonry. Many men petition our lodges because they are seeking something. They want to belong to an organization that shares their values. They want to improve their character. They want to take part in the time-honored traditions and the ancient teachings of Freemasonry. They want to live their life to a higher and more noble standard. The expectation when they join is that they are going to receive instruction on these things, yet many find that the only instruction they receive is how to vote by the usual sign of a Mason. Why is Masonic education necessary? When men enter Freemasonry and their expectations are met, they talk about it. And they also talk about it when their expectations are not met. Word of mouth can be our greatest asset or our worst liability. Although Freemasonry can be viewed as an individual journey, the lodge or assemblage of Masons reveal that it is in large part a collective effort. If we don't exert the effort to assist in their quest, they become a conversation in which no one seems to be able to figure out why they left. It has been said that we should be putting more Masonry into men than more men into Masonry. The teachings of Masonry must be instilled into the brethren, and in order to do this, some form of education is obviously not only desirable, but very necessary. A brother writing in an Australian journal, the New South Wales Freemason, states the position very clearly when he writes, "It is not the primary function of Masonry to initiate candidates or to enlarge its membership. Were it so, there would be no basis for our laws against proselytizing. The ordinary function of a Masonic lodge, indeed the primary function of our craft, is to train its members to an understanding of the truths which its rituals and its ceremonies are calculated to inculcate. Therefore, it should be the duty of every Masonic lodge to put into action a plan for the education of its members in Masonic history, symbolism, and philosophy, devoting more of its meetings to this much-neglected function. The simple fact is that brethren want education, and we must stop allowing them or forcing them to seek more light where light does not exist. We must transform the ways in which we do things into a methodology that provides the opportunity to grow as Masons rather than as numbers. We must create a sacred space where we can learn from each other, talk about values, learn more about what Freemasonry has to teach us, and about how to become better men, better husbands, better fathers, better citizens. We must set the conditions that allow us to understand and appreciate the veiled lessons which Freemasonry seeks to impart. Brethren, I have taken more than enough of your time this evening. However, before closing, I would like to leave you with a quote from Albert Pike's Morals and Dogma, The Secret Master Degree. Masonry is useful to all men, to the learned because it affords them the opportunity of exercising their talents upon subjects eminently worthy of their attention, to the illiterate because it offers them important instruction, to the young because it presents them with the salutary precepts and good examples and accustoms them to reflect on the proper mode of living, to the man of the world, whom it furnishes with noble and useful recreation, to the traveler, whom it enables to find friends and brothers in countries where else he would be isolated and solitary, to the worthy man in misfortune, to whom it gives assistance, to the afflicted, on whom it lavishes consolation, to the charitable man whom it enables to do more good by uniting with those who are charitable like himself, and to all who have souls capable of appreciating its importance. and of enjoying the charms of a friendship founded on the same principles of religion, morality, and philanthropy. Brethren, thank you for allowing me to address you this evening on such an important subject. Your time, attention, and dedication to our craft is greatly appreciated. In closing, may the Grand Architect of the Universe pour down His blessing on each and every one of you. And there you have this intense, really great address on Freemasonry and particularly Masonic education that was given by Right Worshipful Brother Ray Dunn. I hope you all enjoyed. And with that, let's get into this week's Masonic Minute with illustrious brother Stephen L. Harrison.
After years of hearing about it and never having seen it, I finally got a copy of the infamous Simpsons episode, Homer the Great, where Homer joins the Masons. Only it's called the Stonecutters in the cartoon. The gist of the episode is that Homer feels left out when he discovers he's just about the only guy in town who doesn't belong to the fraternity. He tries to sneak in for a peek, but gets kicked out and informed, in order to join, he either has to save the life of a stonecutter or be the son of one. Turns out, Homer's dad is a member. Once in, he's afforded all the privileges of membership, including a comfortable chair at work, a secret route to commute, and other amenities. Allusions to the Masons, their so-called privileges and dastardly deeds abound, and are manifest in this drinking song in the episode. Who controls the British crown? Who keeps the metric system down? We do. We do. Who leaves Atlantis off the maps? Who keeps the Martians under wraps? We do. We do. Who holds back the electric car? Who makes Steve Gutenberg a star? We do. We do. Who robs cavefish of their sight? Who rigs every Oscar night? We do. We do. The episode really goes off the deep end when the Stonecutters discover, by virtue of his symbolic birthmark, Homer is the long-lost chosen one. Homer takes charge, the gang gets sick of his leadership, forms another club, and won't let Homer in. Of course, there is the mandatory platitude at the end where Homer discovers it's better to belong to another exclusive club, his family. The director's commentary comes on the CD, and in it, we hear such misconceptions as, you know, Washington, D.C. really is laid out in the form of Masonic symbols, and Masonic symbolism is all over the dollar bill. Oh well, it's only a cartoon. Actually, I enjoyed it. Chuckled at the parts where I was supposed to laugh, and may have been more amused at some of the inaccuracies. It wasn't great literature, but it was certainly better than watching the 127th rerun of Secrets of the Freemasons on the History Channel. For the Whence Came You podcast, this is Steve Harrison with the Masonic Minute.
And at this point, I really have to invite you to go check out the video, because then you can hear the song that they sing in the episode. Now, Steve actually had the song within the portion of this Masonic Minute. However, YouTube basically says, I can't do that. I got hit for a copyright violation when I uploaded the video. And while I wasn't being penalized, it was on my account. You can thank Fox Media for that one. infringement of all things. So anyway, check out the video. Go to our YouTube channel for that, WCY Podcast or Whence Came You on YouTube. Subscribe, like, all that good stuff, and check out all of Steve's awesome videos as they relate to a multitude of subjects, 112 episodes of it so far up on there.
he's been doing this for years now, and we just can't thank Steve enough for his contributions. So thanks to illustrious Brother Harrison for putting together this wonderful Masonic Minute. And again, if you haven't seen that episode of The Simpsons, you should check it out. I think actually John Ruark does a presentation on the Stonecutters too. It's kind of a funny, cool presentation that he does on pop culture. But if you're interested in that, you know, I'll put a link to his Masonic Speakers bio page there on the show notes, as well as a link back to Steve's video, which has that original full-length song inside of it. Here we go. This next piece was written by my friend, Right Worshipful Brother Spencer A. Haman. As a guest contributor to the Midnight Freemasons blog, he is also, coincidentally, my senior warden of my lodge, Spes Novum. And let's hear about the unsung history of the Goose and Gridiron. Fair and Foul Correspondences by Midnight Freemason guest contributor, Right Worshipful Spencer A. Haman. The thoughtful pupil of Freemasonry cannot help but be pleasantly astounded by the various correspondences, both designed and serendipitous, which permeate our craft. These corollaries irrevocably link the philosophy of the craft with the whole of the human experience, if one only deems to pull the thread. Consider the origin and formation of the first Grand Lodge. There is hardly a Mason who has not read or been told the anecdote. Four early 18th century lodges in London, England, decided that in the interest of unity, they ought to form a Grand Lodge, or a central regulatory body. On St. John the Baptist Day in June of 1717, the very first Grand Master, one Anthony Sayer, was duly installed at the Goose and Gridiron Ale House in St. Paul's Churchyard. For many, the story ends here, relegated to little more than a piece of trivia or a few sentences within a handbook. In truth, there is not a great deal on the written record about this event, save for some accounts, both before and after the formation, and a few paragraphs in Anderson's Constitutions. Besides additional research that can be done upon the climate of early Freemasonry, geography, and some of the men present, there appears to be little more to consider about the event. Let us momentarily take a step back from this topic, and instead turn our attention to a figure of classical Greek mythology, Orpheus, son of the musical muse Calliope, and Ogris, king of Thrace. He is particularly noted as a musician of exceptional skill. The music he plays on his lyre, an ancient stringed instrument somewhat akin to a small harp, and a thread which itself leads to fascinating occult musical and mathematical correspondences with Pythagoras, has supernatural abilities to charm humans and nature itself, even overpowering the spell of the siren's song. As the myth goes, Orpheus marries the beautiful Eurydice, who, not long after their marriage, is bitten by a snake and perishes. Overcome with grief, Orpheus journeys into the underworld, where he is met with numerous challenges and obstacles in his attempt to bring back his love. So great is his resolve and skill that he uses his music to persuade Hades to allow him to retrieve Eurydice. However, Hades sets one stipulation. Eurydice may follow Orpheus out of the underworld, but Orpheus is not to look back, or Eurydice will remain in the underworld forever. Orpheus and Eurydice journey out of the underworld, but as they are on the brink of escape, Orpheus is overcome with a terrible fear that his wife may not be following him. He turns to see if she's still behind him, and in doing so, both sees her faithfully there and loses her forever. After Orpheus's return to the world of the living alone, he spends the rest of his days in quiet worship of the sun, Apollo. There are multiple versions of how Orpheus died, but one widely recounted version expounds that he is murdered, playing his music until the very end. He is then transformed into a swan, a possible corollary to the concept of a swan song, and the muses place him and his lyre amongst the stars in the heavens. Interestingly, in classical astronomy, the 2nd century AD astronomer Claudius Ptolemus, or Ptolemy, included the constellation Cygnus, the swan, amongst his 48 recognized constellations. Ptolemy also lists the constellation Lyra, the lyre, which closely neighbors Cygnus. These constellations, both in name and proximity, can be viewed as an astronomical representation of the Orpheus myth, and are still visible and recognized today in modern astronomy. Further tracing the liberal arts as Western art, music, and specifically opera developed, the Orpheus myth was a favorite of early narratives. It is not difficult to see the appeal. The protagonist is a musician who uses music to supernatural effect during the story, and essentially dies and returns from death, the underworld, during the story. In fact, the earliest surviving opera written by Italian composer Jacopo Peri, 1561-1633, and premiered in 1600 was titled Eurydice, and is essentially a telling of the Orpheus myth. Whether fans of the form or not, most of us are already very familiar with a part of an Orpheus-inspired opera, the theme Galop Infernal, from the 19th century French composer Jacques Offenbach's Orpheus opera, Orphée aux Enfers, which is more lovingly known as a tune and dance craze by the name of the Can-Can. The mythical, astrological, and musical associations with Orpheus have made him a popular figurehead for performing art troupes over the centuries. Indeed, there have been numerous societies and guilds which have taken up the moniker over the centuries, including the Swan and Lyre Musical Society, which has been active for over 500 years in England. What does any of this have to do with Freemasonry or the founding of the First Grand Lodge? As many a philosopher and mason have asserted over the centuries, the answer lies in the pub. The Goose and Gridiron Alehouse, a seemingly nonsensical name, is in actuality a parody of the Swan and Lyre, the name of the Musicians Guild which also met at the public house. Upon examination, the parody name makes perfect sense. A goose is a bird similar in build to a swan, and a lyre with its many strings, when turned sideways, does indeed resemble an iron cooking grate, a gridiron. While it is unclear if the pub was named Goose and Gridiron from the start, or if it was actually first named Swan and Lyre and became lovingly referred to as the Goose and Gridiron, in a similar way as one may acknowledge a certain global hamburger proprietor as the Golden Arches, by 1717 the pub was widely known as the Goose and Gridiron and had a prominent sign hung above its facade with the image of a long-necked bird and many slatted rectangular shape. What became additionally interesting is the parallel between the myth of Orpheus and the Craft Lodge Masonic legend of Hiram Abiff. While specifics of each story vary, both tell of an extraordinary individual who leaves the realm of the living and rises back up from the realm of the dead to an ultimately higher realm. This transformation and transmutation through death can also be found in the doctrines of many religions and philosophies, including as Christianity and alchemy. Whether our early brethren made a conscious choice based on symbolic correspondences when they chose the Goose and Gridiron Alehouse as the birthplace for the First Grand Lodge is a matter of speculation. There has been no known documentation to surface with any evidence to confirm such a claim. However, there need not to have been a deliberate and philosophical decision made to bring this together satisfactorily. Even coincidences, by definition, are remarkable events, and whether wrought by the hearts and minds of men or drawn on a far greater trestle board than they can comprehend, the universe is found to be a remarkable place when one only deems to pull the thread. Spencer A. Haman. Right Worshipful Haman has a vast and varied set of skills and interests and boundless curiosity. Drawing inspiration from his love of music and engineering at an early age, Spencer began apprenticing to learn the luthier's art as a high school freshman in 2003. He graduated from the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee in 2011 with a Bachelor of Fine Arts in Musicology focused on organology. He now works professionally as a luthier. For those of you who don't know, a luthier is a person who makes and repairs stringed instruments, so violins mostly for him, managing many workshops in the Illinois and Wisconsin area, completing repairs and restorations of fine string instruments, providing education on instrument history and maintenance. Spencer also enjoys performing music on a variety of instruments. He's an avid collector of fine tools, frequently takes commissions for custom work within woodworking, and restores typewriters, bicycles, among other antiques. Curatorship and adding value are core to his personal philosophies. Spencer was raised in 2013, serving as Libertyville Lodge No. 492's Worshipful Master from 2017 to 2018. And he currently serves the Grand Lodge of Illinois as their Grand Representative to the state of Wisconsin. He's also a District Education Officer for the 1st Northeastern District of the state of Illinois and a certified lodge instructor. So not bad for this guy, right? I loved this piece. It gave me the history. It gave me some mythology, some philosophy, and really tied it all together. It's like the rug in the Big Lebowski. It really ties the craft together for me. Anyway, that's it for this week. I hope you have a wonderful week. With all that, I bid you adieu. Thanks so much for listening to this program. Thanks for supporting us through Patreon. Thanks for supporting us through PayPal, whichever way you choose to do that. Thanks to our newest supporters, Rick Bishop and Brother Lewis. Thank you so very much to both of you for becoming producers of the Whence Came You podcast. If you like Masonic podcasts, I know you do, you're listening to this one, please check out the Masonic Roundtable going live every Thursday evening at 8:30, 9:30 Eastern, and the Midnight Freemasons, where you can find great Masonic education, opinions, stories, all that good stuff related to Freemasonry 3 times a week, Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays. That's it for this week. So I just head on over to WCYpodcast.com, click around, check out the new website, let me know how you like it, if it's cool, if you think it's too plain, too much, whatever your thoughts are. We still have all of our cool stuff, like our remastered Manly P. Hall lectures are still there. It's under the past projects. I also have Masonic Curators listed there. I got a weird request. Somebody wanted me to bring back Masonic Curators. If you want me to bring back Masonic Curators, send me an email, let me know. But it's really not going to happen without additional support from you. And I don't mean monetary support. I mean, I need you guys to send me videos. So if you're interested in that, please do. And, of course, the Episode Vault, which is all of our episodes on a RSS feed. So iTunes only gives you the last 300 episodes. So there's 100 episodes you can't get if you're on iTunes. So if you're listening to this on iTunes, that's right. You got to go all the way back and start from the beginning. The bookstore, we've got links to some of our affiliates. You want to know about me, there's some information there on a tab. I'm not that interesting. The presentation schedule, where I'll be over the next few weeks, months, all that good stuff. I just secured another one. So December 10th, Masonic Pub Crawl, Freemasonry in America, Colonial Tavern Beginnings, Evans Lodge 524. We're going to be doing it in the parlor, open to the public. I think there'll be some ladies there this time. It'll be fun. Bring your ladies out for a good educational topic. It'll be far more interesting than your typical stuff. It'll be like watching a really cool History Channel documentary, but instead I'll be right there showing these really cool documents. February, I'll be at Libertyville Masonic Lodge, number 492 in Libertyville, Illinois. There'll be an afternoon symposium. I'll be one of the 3 or 4 speakers that'll be there talking about the Ark and Freemasonry on March 7th, the Southeastern Masonic Education Symposium in Florida. Now, March 23rd, that's the new one that I just booked. That is La Crosse Masonic Center in La Crosse, Wisconsin. I'll be doing the Masonic Pub Crawl up there also. So come on out and hang out, and we'll talk, have some fellowship. It'll be a lot of fun. So until next week, stay on the level. For Whence Came You, I'm Robert Johnson. Take care.
You've been listening to Whence Came You, a Masonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry with your host, Brother Robert Johnson. Be sure to join us for our next edition.